This is Lauren Laverne on Six Music, and lucky me, I'm only with Sir Paul McCartney. Hello, Paul.
Lucky me.
Oh, wow, listen, thank you very much for inviting us round to what is effectively the McCartney Batcave, right?
This is it, this is the Batcave, yeah.
this is your office?
In my office, yeah. Occasionally I have to have meetings and things, so this is where I do it.
Have you had this place a while?
Yeah. Long while, it's, actually.
It
now,
seems
yeah.
like it. There's kind of some interesting, I wouldn't really call the art and amazing sculpture and, well, it's a jukebox that's standing in front of me, bric-a-brac, but there's kind of
stuff
around.
Loads of stuff, yeah. There's
a Bob Dylan painting there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty amazing.
That was given to me by my son, and so it's here because I just had it framed. But no, it is. This is like a moving art gallery. There's always things moving through, you know, awards and little.
Yeah, there's an MTV Music Award there on the desk. That's pretty exciting. And amazing to be here. Thank you.
It's a comfortable place to be, you know, beats a warehouse.
It certainly does. Yeah. So listen, you've got a new live DVD out, which is your live show opening the new Cityfield Stadium, which is on the site of Shea Stadium, where, of course, you know, you had one of the most iconic gigs in history with the Beatles. That must have been an emotional night, that concert.
It was really good, actually, because the Beatles opened it in 65 as a music venue. It was already a baseball venue, the home of the New York Mets. We had this crazy concert there. We couldn't hear ourselves. It was like screaming girl seagulls, I think. Like an awful lot of them.
Because the amps were tiny in those days. I mean, they would have just been like... I remember using my practice amps when I first started playing. Yeah. And my dad saying, you know, the Beatles played the Shea Stadium with amps not much bigger than that.
Well, that's true, yeah. And the mic system was the actual baseball announcement system. So, yeah, you know, so... Nobody knew any better.
Yeah.
And nobody had done this before. So we had a crowd of 56,000 people. And we just sort of thought, yeah, well, all right, you know, we'll give it a go. And we just sort of ran out and played. Couldn't hear a thing. So there's a film of it. And you just notice us get more and more hysterical. We're just like, oh, my God, what is going on? So we get the giggles. And it's like, you know, when you were a kid and you weren't allowed to get the giggles because, you know, you were sitting with your mum and your dad and your auntie. And it gets worse. You know, we got uncontrollable. So we had a great gig at a great time. So we opened it then in 65. And then it was due to be closed. We were making a new one. And Billy Joel was closing it. So he asked me if I could do it. So scraping in so narrowly, because I was coming from England on a late flight. And I said to him, well, you'll have finished your show. But anyway... There's a long story of how I got there and how they slowed it up and how the New York cops got me to the venue because it was New York.
No. The audience are like, why is Billy Joel playing so slowly?
His
songs sound like medieval dirges. What's going on?
People were texting from the show saying he's really dragging it out. He's like, oh, let me tell you about the time when they're going, what is he doing, you know? But I'd said to him, I'd rung him when I was at the airport. I said, Bill, I don't think I'm going to make it, so apologies. Have a great evening. He said, oh, that's okay, man, fine, you know. But then I rang my nephew, who's also my lawyer in New York, and I said to him, look, you know, if there's any way I can sort of do it, I don't think I can, but, you know, see what you can do. If it's possible, I'd love to do it, you know. So I got on the plane, and I happened to mention to the steward on the plane, we were chatting, he said, what are you going to do? I said, well, I'm going to New York. I said, there is this mad chance I might be able to make the Shea Stadium thing. And he said, well, I could tell the captain. I said, well, yeah, tell him to put on a bit of speed,
no.
you know, and radio ahead and
fly
say...
Can you extra fast? How does that even work? That's crazy.
Oh, yeah, put the pedal to the metal. So...
in case of Sir Paul Pedal.
Well, you know what it's more a case of? The airport authorities letting you in instead of the big holding patterns you normally have to do. So I said, well, I'm leaving it. So about halfway through, I was actually with my son-in-law. He happened to be flying. So the two of us were in the cabin. And I said to him, I might do this thing. And we were laughing about it. About halfway, of course, I'm starting to flag. Because it's now like 2 in the morning, British time. And I'm going, oh God, you know, no way am I going to do this thing. So I'd gone off the idea. But then when we landed, like, I was scuttled out. And there was a guy that said, come with me, I'm from the mayor's office. And so we just sort of ran. He said, give me your bag. And somebody took my bags. I said, okay. He said, you know, just come here. I said, what about customs? He said, it's all done. So the customs went, I wish I could get through quick, normally that quick.
I know they give musicians so much trouble, Paul. I can never account for that. Why is that?
You know, so they just vaguely looked at my passport. Yep, you'll do. We got from the airport, which is normally quite a long journey, to Shea Stadium, 11 minutes. It was like, doo-doo-doo-doo. So it's like... So by now, I was now up for it. I mean, I thought, well, if you were going to go to these lengths...
Lights, policemen, and, it's like, okay.
And strangely enough, because I was going to also do another gig a couple of days later, I had my bass with me. And my guy, my assistant, won't let it go in the hold.
No.
So he was carrying it.
Because the cold's incredibly bad for them, right?
Yeah, you know, it's not going to... He just won't let it out of his sight anyway. He's very conscientious.
I can imagine why, yeah.
You know, so he had my bass and... So we were all kitted up, and we just ran there, and I saw Billy. I didn't see Billy. No, I saw, because you were on stage, dragging it out. So
see, he was like, visible relief
word,
on his face.
One of his guys. Yeah, you know, the word got around. So well, Billy says, what are you going to do in between numbers? He was passing messages. I said, well, I know that he knows I saw her standing there. Old Beatles song. I said, and I think we did that, Shay, so that'd be appropriate. And then, anyway, long story, even longer, we then agreed that I would finish with Let It Be, so that the Beatles would have opened Shay, and then one of the Beatles would actually close it. Mm. And Billy was very generous, because he should have really closed the show. It was his show, after all. But he said, no, that's cool, that's okay, you know. So then I thought, well, what's he going to do if I'm playing his piano? I thought he might. He ended up lolling on my piano. Like Zsa Gabor.
Oh,
Marlene
how fabulous.
Dietrich, lying on my piano.
Like Michelle Pfeiffer in the Fabulous Baker Boys. That's excellent.
So it was like a ridiculous thing. But anyway, we ended up closing it. So that's a very short answer to your question.
So we're going to play a track from the new album, DVD album, because it comes with a CD. Mm-hmm. What would you like to hear from the live show?
How about Let Me Roll It?
Sounds great.
I've got a little bit of a guitar solo at the end of that I'm into.
I know you've got a new tour coming up, a European tour, and obviously playing live is something that you're still incredibly fired up about, which is amazing. Mm. And it's almost 40 years since you first started doing Hamburg, since you first went out there
with
the Beatles.
It's longer than that.
Is it?
I mean, it was 44 years for the Shea Stadium.
So maybe almost 50 then. For almost, I mean, coming up for the anniversary.
It's longer than I've been alive.
How does that even work, Paul?
You know, we don't know. Don't ask. But it does. No, it's a real long time ago. And, but we're going back to Hamburg, starting the tour there. So that'll be great, you know.
I mean, what was it like when you first went over there and first started playing live and really honing... what you do now and learning your craft as a musician. Do you think the job of being a musician is something different now to what it was then?
Well, I think so. I mean, it's a completely different world. So it is, it's completely different. I mean, we were four kids from Liverpool who got this amazing foreign gig. So, you know, I kind of had to ask my dad if I could go. Mm. I mean, you know, George, actually, we were there for a little while and they found out he was too young. He got deported.
Oh, yeah, I read about that.
And they were like, we were kids, you know. But, so we'd only played Liverpool, really, and a couple of, you know, Nantwich. I think we played a couple of other little places
the
outside.
The big venues, Nantwich,
Nantwich
Liverpool.
Was totally happening, yeah. But, yeah, so we ended up there. We took a van. We drove in a van and went to the borders, went through a few borders, you know. And we were asked, have you got any coffee? We went, pardon? Said, have you got any coffee? Because apparently there must have been a lot of coffee smuggling going on.
Really?
Very bizarre. But anyway, we said, no, we're not bringing coffee through. Don't worry, we're all right. We've got chewing gum, but it's the extent of it. So anyway, we went there, and there was this little club called the Indra, which I think means India in German.
Yeah.
And it was a complete new world to us, because it was in the strip club area.
It was, because it was quite, I mean, it was a bit of a place with a reputation, wasn't it? It was, all because a big port, all but destroyed in the war, and then kind of sprang up again, but it'd become a bit of a, somewhat of a den of iniquity. Was that, maybe you didn't see any of that, I don't know.
We did. That was half the fun. Are you kidding? You know, young boys let off the leash from Liverpool.
Well.
We definitely were, you know, having a look around. But, so it was like, whoa, we've never been to this kind of place before. I mean, it had it all over Blackpool.
And that was only that. This is the gig for me. I want to keep doing this.
So it was amazing, you know, and so it was kind of very alien to us. But a guy came along called Willy, who was the Geschäftsführer, which meant like the manager of the club. And we sort of said, well, you know, what's happening, man? And he said, well, you know, you must make show. You must make show. Make show. So that was like the only instruction we were given. So we thought, yeah, all right, you know, we'll do all our songs and we'll try and mack a bit of show as we go along, you know. And that's sort of what happened. That was kind of like our training ground. Because really what would happen most of the time, first of all, when we played there, the club was empty most of the time. It wasn't a sort of well-known club. And this guy was bringing over bands from Liverpool in order to try and increase business there. It was a little bit of a new thing then, rock and roll, you know, particularly in Germany. Anyway, so we would be in this virtually empty club, and you would see, normally I have this vision, you'd see a couple of students come in, and the first thing they'd look at would be the beer price. You know, beer, 1.50 mark, and they'd kind of, some of them would go, ooh, no way. And
they'd
have to go, they couldn't afford it.
Oh, no.
But then, the game for us was then that we had to attract them in. So this was like, you know, showbiz. So John did a great number, Dance in the Streets. It was like, dance in the streets tonight, dance in the streets tonight, gonna dance here. It was like a Gene Vincent cover that we were doing, and he was one of our favourites from the rock and roll era. And so we see these students go, dance in the street, quick, dance in the street tonight, come on in, hey,
okay.
And we would like attract them in, you know. So once we got those two in, then we'd try and play all our best stuff. And then surely enough, you know, like the word got around. So then they bring a couple of mates, they tell a couple others. And it really was fabulous because probably it took about three or so weeks. But then the club was jam-packed. And that was very cool.
And then it gets addictive, I guess, which is part of the reason why you're still doing it now, still going out and touring.
Yeah.
Do you think that the you have to keep pushing yourself? Because obviously when you talk about like having to get people through the door, that's exciting to kind of still hook people and get them in.
Yeah.
Presumably when, you know, you're an artist with an amazing body of work like yours, you don't have that. People are going to want to come anyway. So you must have to find a way to push yourself.
Well, no, it's different. The thing is now the motivation is that I know they want to really come badly, because I hear that my promoter will say, you're sold out. I mean, one of the gigs sold out in 4 seconds. I think it was the O2.
How is that even possible?
Well, that's what I said. In fact, I was doing an interview with some guy, and he said, I heard you sold out in 4 seconds. I said, no. I said, that's 4 minutes. I said, are you kidding? But then I checked with Barry, my promoter. I said, Barry, it wasn't 4 seconds. He said, yeah. And I think what it is
they can get their credit card details in that fast.
Well, you know what it is. I think you can fill in a form beforehand
and be ready.
And be ready.
And then, like sniping on eBay.
I would like a film of this.
Wow!
All these people going live now to like 20,000 homes, and they're all like, "It's 12 o'clock." Go.
Click of the mouse. That's
digital
it.
Chaos, and then suddenly. So anyway, the point being of what you were saying is, now I actually don't sort of feel like I have to G myself up because it's a built-in factor now, because I sort of think, oh, I love playing to them and they're going to actually like hearing me. So, you know, what can I do so we can have fun?
So it's
and
more playful,
more,
yeah.
That's more the kind of, it's like a mutual motivation now.
So the gig's pretty close to Christmas, 22nd of December, the O2, isn't it?
Mm.
Which is very exciting. I mean, whatever happened to just kicking back and enjoying the festive season, Paul? Do you have Christmas traditions? I mean, what's a McCartney Christmas? I'm guessing no turkey, but beyond that, is there, you know, what have you got any regular things you like to do?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I will take time off immediately after the O2 gig, so, you know, that's when my Christmas will start. It's the 22nd, the O2, so then I've got 23rd, 24th.
Last minute Christmas shopping.
I mean, Christmas will happen, you know, on the tour, and the spirit will be there. And then, yeah, no, Christmas, I mean, for me, it's a family occasion, so we have a great Christmas meal, put the silly hats on, pull the crackers, watch telly, and but it's an occasion just for us all to get together. And, you know, enjoy Christmas. So it's pretty traditional, really.
Is that home for you, family? Because home is something that recurs in your work throughout the decades and through all of your bands and your kind of musical work. Lots of it's about home. Is home family when you're a citizen of the world, as you are, and, you know, you've got made history in New York at the stadium and, you know, kind of Liverpool want a bit of you, being in London forever?
Yeah. Yeah, it is, you know, family. Exactly. Yeah, home is where the family is. And you know what's lovely these days is my kids have got kids. You know, Mary and Stella have both got 3 each. So, I mean, immediately there it's chaos. And then my brother brings his kids, who they're much older, of course. But so it's great. You know, we've got kids of all ages, from babies to sort of mid-20s. And they're my own kids. So it's a nice family group, really.
All right, Paul, so we've got time for one more song. Of course it's got to be one of yours, and from the new live album and DVD, what would you like to hear?
Do you know the song we've just started playing kind of recently in the set? It's an old song, but a Beatles one, but I like it. Paperback Writer.
Amazing. I saw Torvald and Dean do the most astonishing ice routine to Paperback Writer once, where Jane came out of a typewriter. I don't want to give it away, but if you could integrate the two things for the London show, it would be brilliant.
Definitely. Do you know their number?
I'll see if I can contact Dancing on Ice. I've got a friend who works in the production. That'd be fine.
Whee!
Well, listen, Paul, thank you so much, and we wish you a very Merry Christmas in advance. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much, and all your listeners, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year to you all. Have a great one.